You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
What we're dealing with here is a total lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Done by Law, brought to you by the Federation of Community Legal Centres.
Welcome, dear listeners, to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, and also welcome to those listening via various podcast platforms or via streaming on 3cr.org.au. You're with Bonnie and Jimmy tonight, and it's just after 6pm on Tuesday, 2nd of June, 2026. Hey, Bonnie, how you doing?
Good, thanks, Jimmy. How are you going tonight?
Good, thank you. Very nice to be back in the studio. On Wurundjeri land, of course. As always, we would like to start tonight's show by acknowledging the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation as the original and rightful custodians of the land that 3CR broadcasts from. We also acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands our guest tonight is calling in from, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our deepest respects to elders past and present and acknowledge that these lands were stolen, never ceded, always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Thanks, Jimmy. So tonight we are back again talking about the National Disability Insurance Scheme. So listeners may recall that a couple of months ago we had two lawyers join us from the Victoria Legal Aid to talk about the reforms that have been happening with the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Since then, the NDIS has continued to dominate our news cycle, with government now saying it wants to save $37.8 billion over 4 years. And the main way they will do this, they say, is by tightening the NDIS eligibility and cutting around 300,000 people from accessing the scheme. It's a scary time for participants and their families. And if you have not already, we recommend listening back to that earlier show for an overview of the reforms, why they are happening, and how they affect people with disabilities and their families. This episode you can find on 3cr.org.au/done by law. It's the episode from 7 April 2026, and it's titled Sam Sourwine and Miles Brown on NDIS Reform. There are, however, some changes that have arise from these recent reforms that are, on the whole, more positive. These are the changes that have been made to the whistleblower protections under the scheme. We didn't get time last time to discuss these changes on the show, so tonight we have invited Madeline Howell to chat to us and help us understand what has changed to the NDIS whistleblower protections and what those changes mean for people accessing and working under the scheme. Madeline is a lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre and works in their whistleblower project. Welcome, Madeline.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on the show, Madeline. I'm going to take the first question here because when we were writing the show, whistleblowing is a term that many of us have heard our whole lives in all these very exciting media articles and things like that. But just going to basics, what is whistleblowing? What is it about? What does it involve? And can you give us some examples?
Yeah, a basic question, but I think a really, really important one.
Oh,
the term whistleblower does sort of colloquially, evoke a lot of different ideas. And so what we're really talking about is the disclosure of incidents or information about where law or process has been breached. So that can be including human rights abuses, fraud, corruption, government maladministration, harassment, threats to health and safety, environmental wrongdoing, the list kind of goes on. And what we're really talking about is someone who has a close relationship with an organisation where they're in a position to witness wrongdoing occur. So whether that's because they're an employee, they might be a contractor, or in certain sectors like the NDIS, a participant. And they can disclose that information internally to a regulator or sometimes to the public. And that act is called whistleblowing, and this is where whistleblowing laws in Australia also apply. I think, you know, in Australia we've had really high-profile examples like Richard Boyle, the ATO whistleblower who spoke up about unethical debt collection practices, and, of course, David McBride, whose whistleblowing led to the ABC's reporting on alleged war crimes in Afghanistan. Other examples like robo-debt, that wouldn't have been exposed without the, you know, the role of brave whistleblowers. But at its simplest, what we're really talking about is when somebody speaks up or makes a disclosure about wrongdoing that is not otherwise known to the public.
And, yeah, the examples that you've raised, I think, sort of speak to the importance of these people who have that connection, they see what's going on, and speak out about the wrongdoing. So I'd be really interested if you could talk to us, Madeline, about, I guess, some of the typical barriers that people face when wanting to whistleblow about what they experience, and perhaps, yeah, what these barriers may prevent or discourage them from doing that whistleblowing.
Yeah, in my experience advising whistleblowers, I think, you know, the shortfalls in the legal landscape for whistleblowers in Australia at the moment really means that often whistleblowers are paying a high price for speaking up, or sometimes choosing to remain silent altogether. And I think there's a few reasons for that. One of them is that we're working with a really, really complex landscape for whistleblowing laws. There are 19 different whistleblowing laws across Australia, across the public and private sectors. We have upwards of 9 different federal whistleblowing laws, and then various different state and territory specific provisions. And it's possible for someone to be covered by none of these whistleblowing laws. They might be covered by one, or they can be covered by two or more. And so that kind of really complex legal landscape is difficult enough for lawyers to understand, let alone, you know, members of the public who go to work and see something wrong happen and then want to go and disclose that information. I think as an extension of that, often because of a fear of being victimised in the workplace or disadvantaged in their career for speaking up is another thing that stops people from making a whistleblowing disclosure. Research shows as many as 8 in 10 whistleblowers suffer retaliation when they speak out. And those recent high-profile cases that I mentioned before have also had a really chilling effect on whistleblowers. Mm. It doesn't sort of paint a good picture when somebody's thinking about speaking up about wrongdoing. I think another significant barrier is the limited access to support, legal advice, guidance, information as to how to actually go about blowing the whistle. So setting aside the complex legal landscape and the risk of victimisation, the lack of awareness about whistleblower protections also really prevents people from speaking up, because, you know, you have to think, what would I do if I went to work the next day and I saw something wrong? How would I actually disclose that information? For a lot of people, that's not something they're aware of, or they come to our legal service not knowing what options are available to them.
A perfect segue. It sounds like with all these laws and regulations and the repercussions people face, but also the protections that are out there, sounds like a problem that only a lawyer can solve, or at least provide some guidance and advice around. You work predominantly on the whistleblower project at HRLC, the Human Rights Law Centre. Can you explain to us the scope of what your team assists people with and what that looks like in a day-to-day practice?
Yeah, so the whistleblower project was established mid-2023. We're Australia's first dedicated legal service to providing advice and representation to whistleblowers. We advise whistleblowers in the public and private sectors across Australia, and we also advocate for law reform and policy changes to really achieve better protections for whistleblowers. We're a pro bono legal service, so people can contact us and seek our assistance. We provide legal advice for free and often can assist people on an ongoing basis as well, where their whistleblowing, particularly where their whistleblowing relates to human rights abuses or really systemic issues affecting the public.
So I guess then turning to the topic of tonight, the NDIS, I'd love to know, Madeline, from your experience with your work, what does whistleblowing look like in the context of the NDIS system, and why is it important that whistleblowing is protected in this system?
So like any sector or government system, there's of course instances where people who work in the system or access supports will witness some form of wrongdoing and want to speak out about it. I think the NDIS is one area where there are these sector-specific whistleblower protections that fit within the NDIS legislation. It's a little bit unique in that way, and we do see similar sector-specific regimes in the aged care sector and also in the tax context. But the purpose behind the NDIS whistleblower protections and what we see whistleblowers speak up about in our work is the potential for harm, abuse and neglect to occur in a setting that is particularly susceptible for that wrongdoing to go unnoticed. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we've seen a lot of reporting in recent years about participants in the NDIS suffering harm or abuse from NDIS providers, and also allegations of fraud and other kinds of financial wrongdoing. Ultimately, it's participants and their families, and more broadly, the Australian public, that suffer when this kind of harm goes unnoticed. And so the NDIS whistleblower protections are really crucial in ensuring the transparency and accountability of the scheme for the benefit of participants and the broader community.
Yeah, it's that dynamic where you're kind of seeking care and basic needs, where you're at your most vulnerable. Right. And it's, I guess, when you're talking about 80% or so of people face repercussions for speaking out about these things, when it's repercussions on your most basic right to an adequate quality of life, you understandably all the more hesitant to blow the whistle. So how is the law now responding when there are people speaking out about wrongdoing under the NDIS? And what is different about these recent reforms than what we've seen in previous iterations, I guess?
So the whistleblower protections in the NDIS scheme have been there for some time now, but had not been reformed since they were introduced. And so there were some really, really key, I guess, shortfalls in the scheme that we were seeing were actively preventing people from speaking up. And so the recent reforms in March this year, I think, can be summarised as doing three really key things. The first is that they broaden the categories of people that can be protected to make a disclosure about NDIS wrongdoing. We refer to eligible whistleblowers, which is the categories of people that can make a disclosure and be protected. Previously, this was only current employees or current participants, where there was an ongoing current relationship between the person making the disclosure and the provider or the place where the wrongdoing occurred. So what the first kind of major reform is that it's extended the protections to include former employees, contractors and participants, where you might have been working at an NDIS provider and seen wrongdoing occur, and then you leave your employment there, you are now still protected in making a disclosure. The second really key reform is that it's improved the confidentiality protections for whistleblowers. So meaning that they now have confidentiality protections that are akin to the private sector, the broader private sector whistleblowing regime, which is the Corporations Act. And they can also make an anonymous disclosure, where previously you could not. You actually had to provide your name and identifying information in making the disclosure, whether that's internally or to a regulator.
Sorry to cut you off, Madeline, but just while you still had to work there as well and work amongst these people. It's insane.
Wild.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off, please, but go on.
No, and I think that really highlights a key point in that, if the legal advice that you're receiving is that you have to make your name known when you make a whistleblowing disclosure, and that you are only eligible while you're a current employee, it's really easy to see, or a current participant, it's really easy to see why people would want to not speak up.
Absolutely.
And I think the reforms finally also removed some other kind of out-of-date requirements that had long been sort of removed from other federal regimes, which is what was kind of known as the good faith requirement. And that really made the application of whistleblower protections about a whistleblower's subjective intention in making a disclosure rather than sort of the public interest in that information coming to light. And so all of those changes are changes we've been advocating for some time, and we're really pleased to see those reforms because, you know, as I said before, you could have this situation where a whistleblower observes really heinous wrongdoing and then leaves their employment and can't blow the whistle and be protected because they're no longer a current employee. And then that information, they either have to you know, go to great personal risk to disclose it, or stay silent.
I'm trying to understand the scenario in previous to these reforms where anyone would ever disclose anything. It sounds like a really haunting scenario to have to face. But thank you so much for it's good to hear about those reforms, and we'll talk about them a little bit more after the break.
Yes, Jimmy, you're right. It's just after half time here on Done by Law. So we're going to go to a quick community service announcement, and then we'll come back to talk more about these reforms.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Welcome back to Done by Law on 3CR Community Radio with Bonnie and Jimmy. We're speaking with Madeline Howell tonight about whistleblower protections for people that speak out about wrongdoing in the NDIS system. Before the break, Madeline took us through some of the recent reforms that have happened in this space, and it seems like some really important and long overdue changes have happened there, which is positive to hear. But Madeline, I would be really interested to know that from your experience working with whistleblowers, what do you see as some of the trends happening for whistleblowers in the NDIS system at the moment?
Yeah, I think, you know, we work across all sectors in Australia and see, I guess, the overall negative experience that many whistleblowers are having. But focusing in on the NDIS, I think, you know, there's some particular trends that we see reflected in the kinds of wrongdoing that people speak up about, and also the experience of the whistleblower. And so often whistleblowers in the NDIS are really speaking up about harm that is impacting directly or indirectly on the human rights of people with disabilities. So one of the reasons why we've been focusing on this area as a sort of sector for whistleblowing reform is that a lot of the whistleblowing that we saw was, you know, really concerning information about really concerning breaches to the human rights of people with disability participants, and also, you know, harms that are really impacting the disability community more broadly, and also go to, you know, the efficacy and efficiency of the NDIS as a tool that's supposed to be for the betterment of the lives of people with disability. I think another sort of key trend we've seen is that in the NDIS there is a lot of casual work and particularly sort of more this casualised workforce really means that the risk of victimisation can be a bit higher, in the sense that, you know, people are more likely to receive less work or even sort of lose their jobs because of speaking up, and that can sort of those risks can be a little bit more acute when you have this sort of casualised workforce, particularly for support workers or, you know, other sort of frontline workers who are more likely to actually witness these kinds of harms that I'm referring to. They're often in sort of a difficult position when it comes to speaking up. They might be working for, you know, a lot of NDIS providers are smaller organisations where the risk of them being identified as the whistleblower is higher, but there's also, you know, really genuine reasons why they want to speak up about the wrongdoing. They're concerned about, you know, the well-being of a participant. And so, you know, those that kind of that trend really lends itself to, I guess, a greater risk of victimisation. And, you know, that's not an area that we want to see the burden on whistleblowers to speak up about that kind of wrongdoing. And I think also there's a real lack of awareness within the sector around the presence of whistleblower protections. Often we have clients coming to us who are aware about, you know, reporting obligations generally, but are not aware about whistleblower protections or the fact that their organisation might need to have a whistleblower policy. They may not be aware that there are protections available if they report that information to the Quality and Safeguards Commission or the agency. And so, you know, I guess putting all of those things together, there can be a real sort of fear of retaliation and victimisation within the sector, which is concerning.
Mm, yeah. And it sounds like, you know, we talked about just before the break some of these recent reforms, which we talked about, you know, the increasing who may be an eligible whistleblower and these kind of increased confidentiality protections that people can have if they choose to whistleblow. To me, I don't want to answer the question for you, but to me that seems like the bare minimum. I can't believe these things weren't in place prior, that, you know, you have to work. You don't have to work at the place anymore. You can walk out if you're seeing horrible treatment and speak out about it without kind of falling out of eligibility. So it seems like to me that these reforms could go further. Do you think they go far enough in this instance? Are we going to see real change in what we're seeing out there, do you think?
Yeah, I think you pick up on a really good point there. And, you know, we are really encouraged to see the Albanese government responding to some of those really, really pressing issues within the scheme that were sort of actively preventing people from speaking up. But I do want to emphasise that the NDIS whistleblower protections do still remain far behind other federal whistleblower protections and behind best practice. And so those reforms that we've seen in March are really good first step and did sort of address some of those really glaring issues. But overall, we do still see that whistleblowers are having negative experiences when speaking up and that these protections are still remaining out of step with other federal whistleblowing regimes. You know, no one should be left worse off for speaking up in the public interest. So there's still many issues around sort of the strength of protections and the practical accessibility of enforcing those protections for whistleblowers. The NDIS protections remain some of the most underutilised in the country. Mm-hmm. And so government's considering the NDIS integrity more broadly at the moment. And so we're hopeful that attention to that issue will sort of bring up the need for greater work on whistleblower protections in the NDIS. You know, the lack of protection for external disclosure and disclosures to support people remains a really big issue. And so there's kind of these glaring issues that are still remain and keep the NDIS protections out of step with other federal regimes. So we're hopeful that that increased attention to those issues, we're going to see some more reform.
Yeah, I think that's so telling that you touched on that the whistleblowing protections that are there are the most underutilised for the NDIS scheme. So in terms of the changes that you still see need to happen, what do you think is the process going forward to get these protections to where they need to be?
Yeah, so the main private sector protections in the Corporations Act and the Taxation Administration Act are sort of the most recently substantially reformed in Australia, though that was back in 2019 now. Those ones are really best practice at the moment, but are still behind in terms of international best practice in our view. There's reform processes currently happening in the private sector and also in the federal public sector protections found in the Public Interest Disclosure Act. We really want to see government take a harmonised, consistent and holistic approach to reforming whistleblower protections at the federal level. So what we're moving towards with best practice is greater clarification and simplification of what is a really complex regime, and also greater support for whistleblowers and stronger obligations on recipients of disclosures to actually address or escalate reports. But we're really not quite there yet across the board. I think the next step in the short term, at minimum, we really need to see government harmonise the NDIS whistleblower protections with other private sector protections in the Corporations Act and in the tax sector at the federal level. But in the medium to long term, in our view, it is absolutely necessary for government to take a more holistic and economy-wide approach to improving whistleblower protections, which should look like one whistleblower protection law or one whistleblower protection act that would cover all private sector employees. You know, there's no reason why a whistleblower in the NDIS sector should have weaker protections than a whistleblower in another private sector organisation.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Madeline, thanks so much for coming on the show tonight. It sounds like while the Albanese government was very happily quickly cutting 300,000 people from the scheme, the changes in terms of whistleblower protections is going to be a little bit more incremental, and we hope we can see some of these changes in the future. We are running out of time, so if those changes and iterations do arise in your work, please, please, please reach out to us and come back onto the show. We'd love to have you back on. If someone is seeking, just quickly, if someone is seeking whistleblower protection advice from the Whistleblower Project, how should they reach out?
Yeah, so they can contact the Whistleblower Project through our intake form on the Human Rights Law Centre's website. They can make a confidential submission letting us know a bit of information about what kind of advice they're seeking, and we'll contact them and hopefully be able to provide them with some legal advice.
Fantastic. I've got the website in front of me, hrlc.org.au, and you can scroll down to the pink bar and you'll see Whistleblower Project to learn a lot more about the amazing work that you guys are doing. Madeline, thanks so much for joining us on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Done By Law on 3CR 855 AM, streamed at 3cr.org.au and available on various podcast platforms. Done By Law, we'll be back again next Tuesday at 6 PM. Or as always, stay tuned now for the voices of West Papua.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.